Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Jeanette Abney, and I want to thank you for joining me here for another exciting episode here at Precious Predicaments at Blog Talk Radio. As usual, I want to thank my Heavenly Father for waking me up this morning, and even though I had to roll out of bed because I did not want to get up this morning. And secondly, I also want to say happy birthday to my youngest sister, Angel, who is catching up with me in age. I also want to say happy birthday to my other nieces and nephews, Alicia, which I kind of called you to Alicia earlier, and Raisa and Trayvon. And I also want to say tomorrow could be why I didn't want to get out of bed, because tomorrow will be the birthday of my mother and my grandmother, who is deceased and have passed away. And the show was actually dedicated to my mother's name, which Precious was her nickname. So for those of you that want to know where the name Precious Predicaments came from, it was given to me in regards to Precious, and that is my mother's name. And that's a way of keeping her memory alive, and that's why I always talk about her a lot. So, again, happy birthday, which would have been my mother's and my grandmother's birthday. And I said when I did my FaceTime, I used to strongly dislike the month of October, because it seems like everybody in my family had a birthday in October except for me. And I used to be so mad. And then when I got older, I hated buying gifts all the time. So that was why I disliked October. So no offense to you guys with the October birthday. So happy birthday. So today's topic is about serving time. Now, when we talk about serving time, last week's show, we talked about understanding the criminal justice system in regards to justice for all. And I had a very interesting guest on my show, which by the name of Brandy Duvall, and she's also going to be joining us again today as we talk about this topic. Because if you missed last week's show, you can also click on the link, you can go to the archive, you can Google my name, and we gave a lot of information as it relates to individuals in regards to helping them to navigate their way through the criminal justice system, understanding the court process, the difference between a public defender, alternate defender, and things of that nature. So I strongly advise you to listen to that show, and you will definitely be entertained and educated at the same time. So let me log on my caller. Hi,
hello.
This is Jeanette. Welcome to you. How are you doing?
I'm great, Jeanette. This is Rose. And I just have a question. I'd like to know what can be done once a loved one is given a long prison sentence. Is there some kind of appeal? You know, even if they've been in prison for a long time.
This is what I need you to do, Rose. I need you to stay on the line with us. Let me log on Attorney Brandy Duvall. She's going to be talking about that, giving information and resources. So hang on in there, okay? Give me 1 second.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, this is Jeanette Abney. Welcome to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
Great. Doing great.
Is this Miss Brandy Duvall?
Oh, yes. I'm here. How are you?
You know what? I did an eeny, meeny, miny, moe because I had two with the same area code. I thought the first one was you, and the lady started asking me a question. I was like, uh-oh. So I was like, wait for the attorney. Okay, well, like I said, backed by proper demand, I want to introduce Ms. Brandy Duvall. She is an attorney in the Los Angeles, Long Beach area, and she has a very strong passion when it comes to educating and informing inmates and their families of resources and information that they need in order to navigate themselves or their way through the criminal justice system. This show is not to say that individuals, you know, or try to candy coat those that have gotten in trouble, but we also want to let and find out why they're getting in trouble, why is the sentencing not fair, how to help family members basically get through this process, because what people fail to realize is we all have been touched by someone in our family going to jail, currently in jail, serving life sentences, and this right here is nothing to play with. Because as we know, the United States leads the world in incarceration. And they had a report, and it explored why it offers recommendations for fixing the system. But yet it seems like the system still is not fixed. And we all know what it feels like to have someone serve jail or prison time, and others may have been the individuals that was behind the wall. Now, with that being said, Brandy, tell the listeners who you are, what you do, and your passion for doing such.
Sure. My name is Brandy Duvall. I am an attorney. I'm based in Southern California. When I graduated from law school, I started out volunteering at prisons, and from there I started doing work with lifers. I still do some of that. I do largely now work with disabled people. So, and I got into this. I had people in my own family, people that I was close to that had encounters with the prison system, and I wanted to know what I could do to make a difference. But I also knew from those encounters that being prison didn't mean that you were a bad person. Being in prison usually means that you may have done something bad. So maybe you did something bad, but you're not a bad person.
And when you say lifers, what does that mean? People that have been given life sentences?
Yes. Lifer is any, there's essentially two kinds of lifers. There's a person who's given a life sentence with the possibility of parole, and so we just refer to them as a lifer. And then there are people that are LWOPs, and those are people that are doing life without the possibility of parole. So they're never going to be released.
So there's no type, is there any kind of type of appeal that can be made for lifers or...
There is. So if you're a lifer, well, let's go back a little bit. So if you are in prison and you're serving a long sentence, usually you've had an automatic appeal. There are certain types of cases in the state of California where you'll get an automatic appeal. For example, if you're sentenced to death or something like that. So you'll get automatic review. That's called the direct appeal. Now you're serving time. You've been in there for a while. Maybe you found some new evidence, like that's always on the news, right? People that get released miraculously after 25 years. That is called the habeas corpus process. And so during that process, your attorneys will file a brief in court and say, hey, we have this new piece of evidence. And if you're lucky, you'll get what equates kind of to a new trial. It's called an evidentiary hearing. So you can always file a habeas corpus. They're really hard to win. Your best shot is at trial, and then you have your direct appeal, and then you can file a habeas brief. There are some time limits on that unless you have some new evidence or there's a change in the law.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, we have another listener that has basically just called in. Give me 1 second. Let me log them on. Hi, this is Jeanette Abney. Welcome to Precious Predicaments here at Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
You think
Hello? You're talking to me, Jeanette? Yes,
this
I'm talking
Nick.
To you, Mr. Hello, Mr. Nick.
Okay, I got confused. I've been on 2 minutes before you started.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
What I would like to know is, well, I know, but people are locked up for what they did, not by what kind of person they are. So, wouldn't it be more proper just to help guide them through the process if they did commit a crime and want to straighten out and go through the process?
Let me say something, Nick, in regards to your comment that you just made, that people are locked up by what they did. A lot of times individuals can be in the heat of a passion. They can, in the heat of the moment, something can happen. And what you may have been involved in, if you was there, because I want to say that there are some individuals that did not commit a crime that could have been falsely accused of some things, wasn't even there, and don't even know. So I don't want to just say that they actually did it because we don't know. Secondly, I can be walking down the street I can get into a fight with someone. To me, it's a fight. I may be charged with assault and battery. I could be charged with attempted murder. I could be charged with a whole lot of different things because they can add on charges. And I'm charged with these things, which I may be sentenced based on those charges. But to me, it was a fight. And if I've had two strikes prior, now I may have life. And all I did was either had a fight, cut somebody out. So we have to be mindful of that, too, because sometimes individuals are not aware of all of those charges that they may be charged with based on one incident. Did that make sense in regards to what I'm saying?
Yes, that makes sense. So what you're saying is Brandy can help us mitigate the charges, the unjust charges against the just charges.
Sometimes when a person get arrested, and we talked about that last week, how that starts with the police coming out, the contact, and
right.
the charges and the hearings, and they try to navigate through a lot of that information. But I don't want the listeners to just think that just because they are charged with these things, they may have knowingly did it, or a lot of people really don't know. They really don't know. And I also want to start by letting the clients, or not the clients, I'm thinking I'm at work, which I am, letting the listeners know actually what is the difference between prison, jail. There's a state prison, and there's a federal prison. A lot of individuals are not even aware of that information. So, Brandy, let's first start making it simple by explaining what is the difference between jail and prison, and then give us some information about the federal prison.
Sure. So jail is typically where you go in the state of California if your sentence is going to be for 2 years or less, and it is also where you go to be held during the time where you're waiting to see if you're going to be convicted ultimately. Prison is where you go once you receive your sentence and the time you serve is going to be for more than 2 years. There are some exceptions. I've had clients that were only, quote, only going to serve 18 to 20 months when it was all said and done, but because the crime was a felony, they were going to be sentenced to the ultimate sentence would be more than 2 years, but they took time off for good time credits. They were not in jail for the full 2 years. They were not in prison for the full 2 years. But typically, jail is where you go to await trial, and it's where you go to serve your sentence if it's less than 2 years. Prison is when you have been sentenced to more than 2 years.
Okay.
So that's
okay,
the difference between jail and prison.
I have a question to ask. What's the difference between parole and probation?
Okay.
That's another good question. So, and these things still apply. What I'm saying is accurate whether you're in state or federal. Parole is early release from wherever you were, typically prison. So it's an early release. You've done some time. Now you're going to be released early. Probation is instead of going. So probation is your sentence. So instead of going to jail or to prison, you get probation.
Okay. Thank you very much for that.
No problem. Then talking about the difference between state and federal, I had one of my professors explain it to me like this, and I've always remembered it like this, which is, if you commit a crime, it's probably against the state because the state has general power. They have the power to protect its citizens and enforce the laws. Your crime is only federal if there is a specific federal criminal law in place that you violate. So you have to specifically violate a federal law in order for it to be a federal crime and for you to be sentenced or serve time in the federal facility. So, for example, let's say, unfortunately, Mr. Blank commits a murder. That's probably going to be a state crime, a crime against the state. But upon discovery, we find out that this person was an FBI agent. Well, there's a specific code section in the U.S. code that makes that a federal crime.
Mm-hmm. I also want to say, Brandy, and throw this in here, too, it also depends on where you're at. Because it could be at a federal place, like at the post office. That would be federal. It could be aboard a military base, which is federal. And so and it could be have some could have something to do with money. It could be federal. So a lot of times individuals get confused between if a person goes serve state time or federal time. So there is a difference, and also there's a difference in what individuals, the way they're treated as inmates in the detention center also, whether it's a federal crime versus a state crime. And I've also, because I am a licensed therapist, and I also provide services to individuals that are court referred, and some may be on probation, be on parole. I had some clients say that they would rather be on parole versus probation because they found that there was more resources at the time for parolees versus probationers once they were out of jail. And then we also found in California the difference that was when a person went to prison, they automatically would get out on parole. And we talked about it last week to now, and because of the proposition, some of them were, once they got out of prison, they was placed on probation if they were considered more nonviolent offenders. So things have changed, but one of the things, if we want to stay on topic with this, when we're talking about serving time and resources, is because there's a lot of things that people don't know, especially the family members. When we're talking about even serving time, there's basically when we talk about how a person is sentenced. Last week we talked about how minorities may get more time for the same offense versus a non-white individual and who determines that. We talked about the different policies. We talked about how to get involved also in your community, how to perhaps even support and donate certain organizations that are involved. So when we start talking about the time factor, Brandy, and we know that each case is different. When we're talking about prison sentence and how, like you said, sometimes you can be waiting to be sentenced or waiting to go to court and you can still be in county jail. We talked about AB 109 and things of that nature. So what would you want the listeners to know in regards to just not only we talked about the federal jail, not the federal jail, the county jails. What about a private jail?
Private prisons, it's interesting because Obama really came out against this idea of private prisons. There were lots of lawsuits against private prisons. And these are, of course, your for-profit prisons, and they're businesses. These private entities get government contracts to build prisons. What we saw was a lot more human rights violations occurring in these facilities, a lot more lawsuits, and so there was an argument that because the training wasn't as available and because this was much more about running a business, with very little focus on rehabilitation, we were seeing that, you know, these private prisons were not the solution to any type of crises that we were having. So we then had President Trump come in, and he even said when he was on the campaign trail that he was going to bring the private prisons back, and that's what he's been working to do.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just to give the listeners some information in regards to private prisons or private jails, when we were talking about that, a lot of times they indicated that private jails indeed exist throughout Los Angeles and Orange County. Riverside County does not have a private jail at all. In fact, in these tough economic times, Riverside County has recently proposed charging all of its inmates for their stays. So when you have individuals out there and they're getting arrested for these charges, a lot of individuals don't realize that they're now charging inmates once they get arrested. Now, private jail is most often sought in what's considered a second DUI time when one must serve at least 96 hours in county jail. Although individuals may have served some time in private jails for a longer term, but in Los Angeles, Torrance, and other cities, especially Anaheim, they do offer such a program. a lot of individuals feel that private jails is never right, and like you said, because of the supervision, and the fees that are charged for private jails vary, vary widely, but usually can include an application fee, and those fees can range from $270, and it can be higher. But many individuals try to do that so that they it doesn't disrupt them when they are working, and then it depends on the individuals, and they're not a flight risk and things such as that. Okay? Now, if you want to call in, if you're listening to the show, you can give us a call at 516-387-1914 as we talk about serving time. Now, Brenda, you indicated that you basically did a lot of volunteer work. What was your experience like with the inmates as you did volunteer work in the jails?
You know, it's interesting. I used to practice family law, and I met some of my worst clients when I did family law versus when I worked with people who were in prison for these, you know, really bad crimes. They were some of the best people that I've ever met, and it's really interesting because one of the things that I discovered, and I don't know if I said this last week or not, but I was really surprised at how, I thought, man, if you come into prison when you're young, you're going to be really, really nuts by the time it's all said and done. And actually what I found was something that was kind of like the complete opposite, because there were a lot of people who came into prison when they were young, and at that time they weren't sending young lifers directly into the prisons. They had the youth authority was, you know, the place for people to go between 18 to 25. They had, you know, different programs and things, and then they would go to prison. So a lot of the people that I met had been, you know, through that youth authority program. They, for whatever reason, a lot of them decided to change as soon as they got into prison. Not always, but it was not uncommon by any stretch. Versus somebody who was over 30, and heaven forbid, somebody who's over 40, it's so rare to come across somebody who's over 40 that commits a violent crime. And when you meet someone who commits a planned violent crime and they're over a certain age, they are some of the most difficult clients to deal with. But I was really surprised at how people who were young were, you know, open and able to change. The other thing that I thought was that it's still really kind of mind-blowing is that when you have an inmate whose family comes to visit on holidays or who writes letters or you know, who gets phone calls or packages, all of these things sort of contribute to this like concept of the whole person. And so you find that people who have close family ties by and far tend to get into less trouble in prison. And then recently, like in 2017, lifers were restored their family visits because for years lifers couldn't get family visits. So now you have people who have another incentive to behave. It's not just the visiting or the phone privileges, but now this opportunity to have family members, the wife, the children come and visit. I've seen just a lot more hope and positivity because of these things.
And, you know, it's interesting you said that, because I remember watching a lot of television shows, and we would see things like the show Got Life with Eddie Murphy, and, you know, looking at the conjugal visits. And before individuals or inmates was having conjugal visits, they was, you know, they basically got in less trouble because they had something to look forward to. And also having not to have their time interrupted by getting in trouble. But part of serving time, and I want to touch on this a little bit, in regards to the psychological impact of prison. As we know, in prison, inmates face a variety of challenges that affect their ability to become productive members of society once they are actually confined, and also when they leave confinement. a lot of times when we talk about rehabilitation, we're talking about vocational training, we're talking about educational programs that was previously used. And there were things such as reentry programs and other transitions that individuals would be able to get involved in order to help them to acclimate back into the community. Now, with funding, with programs, we've seen a lot of programs disappear. And when those programs disappeared, a lot of individuals kind of lost hope in regards to, you know, learning skills, learning trades. They kind of took the weight out of the jails and the prison, because what was happening was some of the prisoners was looking better than those security guards who was able to go to the jail. They was able to work out in the prison. Now, I have a caller that just joined, so let me log on this caller and see what this person has to say. Hi, this is Jeanette Abney. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio, Precious Predicaments. How are you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
I am well. Do you have a question or a comment you want to make in regards to our topic of...
Sorry to cut you off, but I do have a question. I wanted to know, what type of mental health programs do they have in prisons?
Oh, okay. That's a good question. That's a really good question.
I want to say why that's important is because based on our population, the majority of the clients that are individuals that are incarcerated have mental health issues. If not, when they are told that they got life or long sentence, they will slip into depression or just the anxiety of being incarcerated. So, okay, Brandy, go on after.
I mean, and it's understandable. I have asked so many of my clients with long sentences, what were you thinking? How did you do it? And they said, I was in denial. I was very depressed. I was very angry. So you'll see that some people for the first couple of years, they don't really participate in very many programs. Then as they come to accept wherever you go, that's where you are. They come to accept the situation. They start getting involved in programs. And for those that need mental health services, they have a couple of options. One of them, and I think the one that is probably the most frequently used in prison is this program called CCCMS.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a clinical case management system, I think is what it stands for. And through CCCMS, you may or may not be on medication. You do check in with the therapist, and you do have a therapy team that manages, aspects of your mental health. So it's typically, people who are in CCCMS would be people who may suffer from some anxiety or from depression and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's not critical.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Brandy, I want to share something in regards to that. And a lot of individuals were not even previously diagnosed prior to going to prison.
Right.
So they could have had symptoms of schizophrenia. They could have had symptoms of being bipolar, or any type of personality disorders or dissociative identity disorders, and they were not diagnosed until they were in jail. And when we start talking about even just the cost for inmates to have access to medical and mental care, that is another concern, because most prisoners enter prison as indigent, meaning that some may have had Medi-Cal, Medicare, or Social Security, and that discontinues once they go to jail. Now, many federal prisons, a majority of state prisons, have an unknown number of jails that require prisoners sometimes to pay a copay, either $2 to $5 for their medical visits, and individuals are not even aware of that. And in an attempt to reduce feverish use of medical services, fees can be waived for emergencies. Now, prisoners generally pay for these services from minimum wages that they can either earn in prisons, yet the cost of the visits can deter them sometimes to seeking preventive and routine care. I've known individuals that went to jail or prison and that's when they got their teeth fixed, that's when they got glasses, that's when they got a lot of services that they probably wouldn't even have gotten on the streets. So I want to just throw that out there, too. So that's something else. And what you want to also do is kind of break the taboo, because a lot of individuals don't want to be considered triple CMS, but at least
exactly
their mental and medical health needs met. Now, we are halfway through the show, so if you want to call in, you can call in at 516-387-1914. Now, I want to make sure that we're able to offer information when we talk about some of the services and resources that are out there. Now, I can truly say as a mother, because my son did not get in trouble until right after he turned 18. As soon as he turned 18 in March, he was in trouble in April. And I did everything in my power because I didn't want to see my son going through the criminal justice system. I didn't want him to have a record. But then when I started seeing he kept getting in trouble, I was like, you know what, the hell with this. I am not, I refuse to be sitting on these benches. I refuse, because parents go through a lot of stuff, especially when their children have been, you know, locked up, put in jail. And, you know, and sometimes, like I said, they may not have always committed the crimes, but it's not, in some cases, they may not be totally innocent either. Now,
right,
from a parent perspective, the parents go through embarrassment. Sometimes they're ashamed. They don't know what to do. And even me being a therapist at the time, well, I wasn't a therapist at the time, but I was still, I think I was working at Juvenile Hall, but I was in the system and working for the system. And I was like, you know what? This sucker right here is getting on my nerves. Now, I found a blog, and this is a blog that some parents can go on, and if they don't have nobody to talk to and they don't want to be listening to their family, because my mother kept telling me, you got to get my grandbaby out of jail. You got to do this. And by the time I got finished, I was $29,000 in debt, and my son ain't never paid me back. So and then every time he would go back, he's like, Mom, this is my last time. Mom, can you give me $5? Ooh, I would be so mad. Or you get that, you have a collect call from, I mean,
yep,
just, I was like, you know what, I'm just done with this. I am so done with this. Now, this one says, my son is in jail again. To visit or not to visit? That is the question. Now, one of the things you indicated, Brandy, is when the inmate is getting support from family members, it also helps to with their morale. It helps keep them out of trouble. But what about that person that's getting tired? Because when my son got in trouble that last time and went to jail, I said, I'm not going. He did 3 years, I believe, and they sent him to a camp. And the only reason I had to go, I went twice. I went because I promised his kids that I would take the kids to go see him. And I went, and I wanted to sit in the car, because I felt if I didn't show up, he'll stop going. He'll stop getting in trouble. But they wouldn't let me park in the parking lot, so I had to go in. I didn't fill out no visitor's form. But because of who I was, they let me see him. I was so mad. And that was that. And then when he got released, and I had to take that long drive out there, and the whole time I was like, you know what? This is ridiculous. Now, again, to visit or not to visit? That's the question. Now, it says, I really do want to be there for my 29-year-old son, but wonder if not visiting him for a while is the right or wrong thing to do. His court date is coming up, and he will be more than likely to get 3 years plus jail time. This will be the fourth or fifth time in jail. With love, what am I supposed to do? Brandy, what would you have to say in regards to that? Because I know that feeling.
It's a terrible feeling. The truth is, the degree to which you participate in that trial process, that pre-prison or pre-sentencing phase, and even as much as you can with sentencing, is going to be crucial. Even if you decide, you know what, this sucker going to have to do this stretch on his own, that's one thing. But it's totally separate from putting any type of, you know, pressure that you can on your public defender, or gathering letters of support for purposes of sentencing. It's also, you know, in my experience, I found that occasionally, if your loved one is even having an issue while they're incarcerated, putting in a call, a call to the mm-hmm. warden, a call to the watch commander. Could sometimes, I mean, believe it or not, because people know, you know what, this is so-and-so's son or husband, I don't feel like dealing with her. So, I mean, as long as it's done tactfully and carefully, it can help. Now, whether you're going to go and do those visits and put yourself through all of that, again, I think it's a separate question. But when it comes mm-hmm. to working at that early stage with your son's attorney or your daughter's attorney and working with teachers and counselors to get them the help and resources they need, it's crucial because sometimes people of color and or poor people don't necessarily understand what's happening or we don't know, but you can believe that the next person who has a little bit more access to resources is taking advantage of all of this for their son. So it puts our kids okay. at a disadvantage. So it's hard, it's stressful, it's anxiety-inducing, but I would still encourage you at least at that stage to let your son's legal team and counselors and teachers know that they have support. Someone's looking out. You guys are there. You're watching to make sure they get treated fairly.
Okay. And, you know, and I want to say, too, because like I said, with my son, I was like, I'm not doing this. I was so mad. But then my husband, when he was 22, he got in trouble for a crime that he didn't commit and served 25 years. And when I found him, it took me 2 years to find him. And we had been known each other since we were 14 years old. So I would feel so bad for his mother because when I would go visit his mother, and I would always want to go take her to see him. And she waited up until he had served almost 20 years before she finally said, Jeanette, I'm ready to go. But I would go and visit him as a friend, and it was crazy because for a long time I wouldn't go visit him, and then I later had to admit to him, I went to visit him because they thought I had breast cancer. And I didn't want him to get out, be looking for me, and find that I had passed. So I wanted to give him the opportunity to at least see me before I passed away. And when he saw me, it kind of opened up a can of worms because I didn't plan on doing all the stuff I did. But, you know, but it rekindled our friendship, but I didn't want to write. I didn't want to do none of that. And so there's other things that people can do. But I remember I used to go, and I would get so mad. I would go around the holidays. I'd be like, there's a doggone shame. Right. I don't have no day for Christmas. I got to fly all the way out to Oregon just to go see somebody. And I'd be mad at myself, but I was doing it as a friend, and I was doing it for his mother because she wasn't able to. And then right when she said she wanted to go, we went, and it wasn't long after that that she passed. She knew
wow.
she was sick. But she wanted to also see him. So I was really glad that I had the opportunity to take his mother to see him before she passed. And then she passed away, I want to say it was maybe about a year, not even that much time before he got out. She tried to hang on in there as long as she could, and she passed away at 88, and we got married on what would have been her 90th birthday. So
wow.
when I celebrate my wedding anniversary, it was always on her birthday. And I always get mad at her. I told him the other day, I said, boy, when I die and go to heaven, me and your mama fighting, we both going to hell. Because that woman, like, she was determined to put me with her son. Sometimes I get so mad. Okay, hold on. Let me have another caller. Hi, this is Jeanette Abney. Welcome to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm doing well. Do you have a question?
Sure, I have a question. You know, you're talking about people who are trying to get parole. I always remember we could never go to the parole hearings, so I wanted to get a sense of why can't family members attend those hearings. We were always blocked from those, so maybe the attorney can give some background perspective on that.
Let me say this. I want to say that's interesting because when my husband, at the time he wasn't my husband, when he would have his parole hearing, they would have me be on the phone. So I would be on the phone so I always had access to, I guess this call was dropped, so I hope he calls back so we can answer his question. But they would have me on the phone because I wasn't able to fly out there for his parole hearing. So I don't know if the inmate have to invite people or what. Randy, what's your take on that in regards to being invited to the parole hearing?
So in the state of California, the inmate's family is not allowed to attend, participate in, call in to the hearing unless the crime was committed within the inmate's family. So if you commit a crime, so let me phrase it differently. In the state of California, the only people that are allowed to attend the hearing are disinterested and unrelated observers for educational purposes or victims and their next of kin. So the only way for you to be able to participate as a family member, and I've had this happen, is when the crime takes place within your family. Other states don't do that. Other states allow participation. The parole board wants to see where this person is going. But in California, and again, we have such a strong victims' rights lobby that they work to keep the – and, not, you know, there's a strong argument for this, but they keep the process in that arena to be limited to the victim's impact.
Okay. All right. And that's interesting to know because, like I said, he was in – Oregon at the time, or was in Washington at the time, and they would call me, and, you know, so I was always able to be involved, and I was also a very strong advocate for him while he was incarcerated, and he did a lot of writing letters, and he never pled guilty. They found him guilty, but it was a whole lot of other stuff that had to do with his case. Now, I have some information in regards to Parents of Prisoners Community Group. Because there's a lot of information out there for individuals, and we have 18 minutes left, so I want to give you guys as much information as we can. One of the things it indicates is when your loved one goes to jail for the parents, it's got to be tough, but you don't want to give up. So they offer just a word of hope for all of the individuals that are in pain over their incarcerated children. And we're not only just talking about males, but also females. Because a lot of times when individuals are incarcerated, they leave behind children, they leave behind parents. The parents could be sick, could be needing their help. And what happens is after months of attempting to obtain visitation privileges, sometimes trying to get their children or adult children transferred to a closer facility, sometimes that can be a hassle. And especially if your mother is older or if your parents are handicapped or whatever the case may be. Now, they have a group. And in this group, the individual says, I'm new to the group. Her son is 37 years old and is in jail, mostly looking to serve 15 to 25 years in prison. She can't get her head around it, and he has a wonderful family. He was in the military for 13 years and still was to serve two tours, or basically serve two tours. He got whacked out on Annex and antidepressants. And the problem was when he got whacked out or was under the influence, he committed a crime, and now he's doing a lot of time. So her question was, how does a person get through something like this? Meaning my child was in the military. He didn't got a hold of those appeals. He didn't commit this crime. Randy, what advice would you offer this parent?
Wow. Well, first of all, you know, someone, I have a friend that's also an MFT, and she was telling me that sometimes when her clients have a relative who's going through this process, she actually refers them to Al-Anon, which is not exactly on all fours with this issue, but she said that there's an amazing amount of crossover. So there's that. And again, sometimes, unfortunately, this just it does break down sometimes along like class or education because some people don't some communities or some folks don't believe in therapy, which is too bad because I mean just on its face, this has to be one of the hardest times for any family members to go through. And it doesn't just have to be a situation where it's your child; it could be your nephew, it could be your friend's son. When you're talking about someone that gets a long sentence, in some ways the process is similar to a death. There's a grieving process that you do go through.
Correct.
So I would – this is just – and people don't do it, but I would – and then there's the shame associated with it. You don't want to talk about it. But I would recommend either reaching out through your church or to a mental health expert just so that you can do some self-care. There's that. But the other thing, and I think And I have said this repeatedly, and I know my husband and my mom, if they're listening, they're going to say, why did you say that? But this is the truth. I don't know that I'm the best attorney on the face of the earth, but I always have hope, and I try to bring that love, that positivity, that energy with me whenever I'm meeting with somebody who has a really tough case. Maybe we won't win it this way. Maybe it won't happen this way. I don't know. But there's always hope, and there's always a reason for you to live your best life. So for family, you could take the opportunity to change the laws, to work to, hey, if you have somebody who's 18, 19, getting a life sentence, don't give up. Keep pushing for change if that's what you believe in. So you can get involved in local, you know, in organizations. You can, again, like I said last week and earlier today, don't be afraid to work with your son or daughter's legal team to feel empowered and to get educated about the process and to tip the scales in any way that you can in your child's favor.
You know, I want to go back to some of the things because I know we're running out of time and I didn't make it a 90-minute show. I should have, but I didn't. So when we talk about in regards to trying to find some help and adult children that are incarcerated, and I mean, because we, you know, we can go on, and we probably do need to do a series because talking about the juvenile justice system, also talking about the adult system. But with adult children, when to help and when to let them learn. A lot of times parents struggle with that. And like you said, part of it is you don't want to feel like a guilty parent. It doesn't mean that you was a bad parent. It doesn't mean you was a neglectful parent, because once a kid reaches a certain age, sometimes they go their own way. And a lot of times it's like, I don't want them to suffer, but I don't know when it is appropriate to let go. So knowing when to help your adult children, even though individuals have struggled with the jokes in their home, because individuals have said, you know what, if you made your bed hard, lay in it. But then by that same token, we start talking about the words of tough love. But when we talk about tough love, there's a distinction between helping your child fix a problem they created and helping an adult child in a life crisis. And adult children who make poor choices or poor decisions should learn from that decision. And as such, as an adult who buys, you know, excessive money or spend things, but you also need to know when to be there and when it's like, okay, you know what, you're on your own. And I think that was one of the things that I struggled with my son was like, you know what, I ain't got time for this. Now, sometimes people want to know what to do when an adult child calls from jail. I mean, one time my son called me and said, Mom, I'm in jail, and the gun was dirty. I was like, get off my phone. I don't have a phone to say. You're going to have me in trouble with you, you know. But the bottom line was when you start getting those phone calls at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning, sometimes you don't know what to do. And I'm going to tell my son this now. My phone be on off. It be on silent. So when he be calling me, I can't answer. But what are people supposed to do when they start getting these phone calls from their children and their child is in jail?
Well, one of the things is, you know, it's interesting because these calls used to be like super duper duper expensive, and now they're just super expensive. And in the state of California, if you have somebody in a prison, you have to sign up with Global Tail Link.
And you got to put credit card information and all of that.
Yep, you have to give them your information. Yep.
And I'm like, you gonna call my cell phone collect, and I gotta put my credit card. I'm like, you know what, this is just too much.
Go ahead.
No, I'm listening because we got 11 minutes left in the show, and we got a lot more to cover. But what was you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, you know, I have several clients at different prisons, and I probably spend about $200 a year, and that's probably, you know, I don't get calls as frequently as a family member would, but I have a great many more individuals calling. So, I mean, there was a time when that would have been easily $2,000, $3,000. So the prices have gone down. But what I don't want people to do is talk to these knuckleheads on the cell phone. I cannot tell you how many people think they are slick and talking on the cell phone, and they wind up getting a write-up. Yeah, and and the cell phones are expensive. You know, buying those cell phones in the prison can cost anywhere from $400 to $1,000. And somebody's pockets are getting lined with them. That's a whole other story. There was an interesting article about an officer who who was making $70,000-$90,000 on top of his regular income, bringing their cell phones in. And it's through visiting and all kinds of ways. But anyways, if you're not going to pick up a pen and paper and drop me a line and drop him a line, you get to go ahead and get your $25 for the year, and that's it. Or, you know, make sure you don't talk to them about getting make sure you don't take any calls from them on cell phones, no matter what. I know people won't listen, but do not. And like I say, I'll take your call, but if you were out of prison, you wouldn't be calling me this much. So I don't have to sit on the phone all night and talk to you. That's not happening. I mean, that's just – you just got to stand strong on that one.
Okay. Now, basically, the next question – okay, the next thing is what to do when a child asks for money. Young adults today seem to have an unyielding idea that mom or dad is made of money. If your child has a job and is responsible for their money, then chances are they will not come to you for money. But there are some who constantly spend their money cheap or you know, like I used to tell my son, I'm at the ATM. When you make a deposit, then you can get a withdrawal. If you didn't leave me no money, don't be calling me for no money. Now, let me add this caller on. We don't have a lot of time left, but hi, this is Jeanette. Welcome to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
I'm excellent. I have a question. I just wanted to know, can people vote after they get out of prison?
Oh, that's a very good question. It varies state to state. In the state of California, you can vote. People think you can't. It's not true. You can vote, but the only thing that you have to do is you have to register or re-register to vote. So that's it. You don't have to do anything but, you know, register or re-register, and that's it.
Thank you. I wanted to know that.
Thank you.
And that's great, because that will also help change a lot of the laws in regards to trying to help individuals. Now, we only have 8 minutes, Brandy, and I know I am talking real fast, but I want to make sure we do get this information in here, because we mentioned some things in regards to the phone calls, which is one. We also not only mentioned in regards to the phone calls is sending monies. Sometimes individuals have restitution they have to pay, and if they have restitution, some of the prisons was keeping 55%. It was like a 55-45 split, I believe, in regards to some of the money when you was putting money on people's books. And it varies from place to place. And there's a lot of money, like you said, being made in the prison. But I want to give the individual some information in regards to prisoners' rights and resources. And I found this on Prison Inmate Pen Pal. And basically what they have is an inmate advocacy organization. Now, when you talk about these organizations, there's a lot of things and resources out there for individuals. And they have one which is called the All of Us or None. And All of Us or None is a national organization initiative of prisoners, former prisoners, and felons to combat the many forms of discrimination that we face as a result of felony convictions. After receiving time in horrible conditions, we were met at the gate with prejudice and discrimination that made our reentry into society difficult, and in some cases impossible. Many of us have recognized that our prison sentence never ends as long as discrimination against us continues. So they can Google that information, All or None. Another one is the American Civil Liberty Union, which is the ACLU. They have a national prison project and is dedicated to ensure that the nation's prison jails and juvenile facilities and immigration detention centers comply with the Constitution, federal laws, and things of that nature, so they're having issues. They have an Amnesty International USA. They have a program which is called Center for Children of Incarcerated Parents. Their mission is prevention of intergenerational crimes and incarceration. Their goals are the production of high-quality documentation and the development model services for children of criminal offenders and their families for the purpose of education, family reunification, providing therapy and information. And like you said, therapy is very important, because sometimes parents and the kids and the family need counseling to reintegrate and learn to get along. They have an organization called CURE, which is Citizens United for Rehabilitation. And it is also a membership organization, and they provide individuals with information and tools necessary to help them understand the criminal justice system and to advocate for change. They have the Family Corrections Network. They have Family Support America. And the Family Support America is dedicated to providing information, support, and connections that families need to survive. Whether you have a question about child abuse, alcoholism, disciplining children, divorce, or other topics related to family, they're there to help. If for some reason they're unable to help, they will direct you with someone who can. They have the Human Rights Watch. They have the Innocent Project. Now, Brandy, tell them a little bit of what you know about the Innocent Project and what individuals' services that they can be involved in regards to if they are serving life sentence. They have stuff to say, Stop Prison Rape and Safer Society Foundation. But, Brandy, I'm going to give you the floor in regards to what you want to share or what you want the listeners to know. And if you want more information of what I just talked about, you can email me at jabneylmft@gmail.com, and I will be more than willing to provide you with this information in regards to prison inmate pen pals so that you can connect with one of the organizations, and I will also post it on my Facebook page. Okay, Brandy.
Sure. So the Innocence Project is, I think it's probably the most popular organization known for getting people out of prison after they've served quite a long sentence. Usually, I've had several clients that have come to me after contacting the Innocence Project, and their big thing is DNA. There's another, so if you have some new DNA evidence that wasn't introduced previously, the Innocence Project, it's a nationwide organization, and they'll help you. I mean, they have them across the country. They'll help you, but it takes a while, as I understand it, because I've had clients that have tried to get some relief from the Innocence Project. It takes sometimes it can take over a year, and they will evaluate your case and then tell you whether or not they can help you. A lot of people write to them, but they don't necessarily have that DNA evidence that they need, and so it may not be the right type of case for them. There's also another project at USC that's similar. It's called the Post-Conviction Justice Project, and they're kind of like the Innocence Project. As I understand it, they focus a little more on California, a little bit more locally based. And then there are some other organizations I think we talked about last time, the Prison Law Office and Uncommon Law. They do a lot of lifer work because it's not just people who are actually innocent. I mean, in California, the way our aiding and abetting law works, and the way we apply the, felony murder rules, it's so broad that you have people who were not the shooter, not the driver, and they're still caught in this really wide net. And so they may need post-conviction relief because maybe their role in the crime was they weren't the planner, they weren't the shooter. And so now they're coming up for parole or release, or there's been some change in the law. So there's a couple of other organizations that can also help when there is DNA evidence missing. I think, again, the two most popular ones are Uncommon Law and the Prison Law Office.
You know, I want to also share, because we're about to hit the holiday seasons, there's a lot of organizations that also donate to children and make sure that they have a happy holidays for individuals that are incarcerated. So I would also say check with a lot of your nonprofit organizations to see what they have to make sure the kids have a Christmas or Thanksgiving, because we don't want our children to suffer or feel bad. They have daddy-daughter dances. So they're trying to involve a lot of the family members in regards to some of the programs and services that they have to try to bridge that gap, to try to keep the families together. And I think that it's really a good thing, but we have to know what's out there. Now, you talked about aiding and abetting, and a lot of people don't realize how they play a role. That's a whole other topic. So, Brandy, I'm going to have to bring you back because this is good. It's a lot of good information. I mean, it'd take us, it seemed like, forever to to lay down a platform to try to teach and educate individuals about these resources, because I always say when you know better, you do better. So I want to thank you for joining me today, Brandy Duvall, who is an attorney.
It's been my pleasure.
I enjoyed it. And next week, join me as we, in October, because October is, we're in the middle, but we have Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So we're going to be talking about breast cancer awareness. So I know this topic is getting kind of old, but many individuals need to know what that consists of and preventive measures. So join me next week at Blog Talk Radio here at Precious Predicaments with Jeanette Abney. Until then, remember, you got this. Bye-bye.
Bye.